This is Susan Williams in the MFA program in creative writing at Virginia Commonwealth University. It's Thursday, March 14th, 2002. I'm in Charlottesville, Virginia, and I'm talking with George Garrett. The unreliable narrator is a pretty familiar character in your novels and short stories, including Empty Bed Blues. And some of the novels are a sort of mosaic of scenes and episodes told by a succession of unreliable characters. I'm curious, when you use this technique as often as you do, are you saying something about the nature of truth and perception, or the nature of storytelling, or something else altogether?
Well, I don't. It may be something else altogether. I guess the first two things you said are the elements that interest me the most. That inevitably all of these figures, narrators, reliable or unreliable, or to whatever extent reliable, are limited and isolated in their view of what is in fact true. They perceive things, but are not necessarily good reporters of what they perceive, and also not necessarily understand what it is that they perceive.
As a follow-up, when you come to the end of one of your works, do you want the careful reader to be saying, "Now I know what really happened"?
There's not one version that I tend to think maybe that comes across more clearly in the novel you were talking about, because it's kind of evolved out of a lot of other stories and novels written earlier. That sort of everything comes together that I've been interested in narrative technique in that one, and in time. I was particularly interested in fooling around with time. Yes, no, my thought on this was that there is no single version of what happened then. Or on the larger scale, the implication is, I guess, that way out in the nation and in the world, the same thing applies that was happening in this little town, that there is no absolute version. This is the way it went. There are all these, and all have to be taken together with the ones that we don't see.
So that was why so much of Martin Luther King's assassination was worked in and out.
Right. That as an event in itself, it partakes of the similar. Now, I don't know. I honestly don't know whether I was saying in the book or to myself or whatever that that's a characteristic peculiar to our age. I don't know that. It could be. That it's a characteristic peculiar to our age that all events are more matters of all public events, and then that this is infected private land, are matters of image rather than, quote, reality. And that there is no, quote, reality there.
I wouldn't consider your writing to be exactly postmodern in capital letters, but the slipperiness of events does make the reader aware that he or she's being manipulated, and therefore calls attention to it, to the writing itself, in something of the same metafictional way as the postmodernists are doing. I'm quoting here from my class notes on a course in Thomas Pynchon. Terms like problematized narrative voice, contradictory characters, ambiguity, violation of the boundaries between fiction and reality, those seem to describe your work to some extent as well. So how do you see yourself in relation?
That I don't really know the answer to. I'm conscious that lots of writers, and all the way back to Chaucer and then to the classical writers, did some of these same things. And it's been around, the things have been around a long time, that are discovered in the more obvious use of some of these devices by brilliant writers like Pynchon, or one of them that I think of is John Barth, who's very good at this too. A lot of fun. However, they are not by any means the first. It doesn't work. The history of literary events and influences is not a matter of progressive, kind of Darwinian time. It's all, there are a couple of things, and this is what I was fooling around with in a way in that novel, in a different way. All pastime, looked at in one way, from one point of view, all pastime is simultaneous not progressive, not development. The Elizabethan idea that we're decaying rather than progressing, that the Earth is getting, has a sound scientific basis. If you wanted to accept that notion, we're wearing out. We're polluting, destroying, and coming to the end of things another million years down the line, if not helped along earlier. So there's that to consider.
How about one more question, since I'm in an MFA program and you've taught writing for a long time? What do you think about the teaching of writing?
One of the big questions, there's one question that they've been asking for as long as I can remember, and which is it's an old, tired, cliche question, but they keep asking everybody connected with creative writing. Yes, but can writing be taught? And you must have run into that all your life, and I have too. And I don't know why they keep asking that question, because when answering it, sometimes we get some interesting ideas to kick around.
They don't ask that about art classes.
Very, very few people. Perhaps I have no idea how many, but certainly with musical instruments and other things, just pick up a cello.
Right.
And become cellist and end up playing in Carnegie Hall. That just doesn't happen. Now, they first of all don't think that what we're doing is the same thing. They think of us not so much as an art, but some kind of a habit.
A
bad habit, too. And, a wasteful one, like golf or something. I mean, it's really kind of pointless, and golf would be better. But you spend your time better doing that. They do think that way about it. And they also don't realize how much, how many cello players end up, there's thousands in the United States right now, and only a small number of them. We are, I gather, incidentally, speaking of music, it's kind of fun to, we are filling up the orchestras around the world with young American musicians who've had, they're in Frankfurt Symphony in Vienna, and we're predominantly the musical, our musicians are everywhere. But thousands who learned because of nice programs in schools and things, in high school and junior high school, and playing the flute and playing the trombone. My granddaughter, ended up, she's in a little junior high, public middle school, they call them now, not junior high school. And at the middle school, they just sort of, you lined up and they handed out instruments. You're going to be a trombonist. You're going to play the flute. You're playing the drums. And but she had fun and so forth and so on. She's going to be a better person with a better understanding of music. There's nothing to help you understand it so much, music or any of the other arts, as having tried your hand at it. They don't understand that the people who question the value of teaching reading and writing on the level that we do, they simply don't understand that a valuable thing need not necessarily lead to stardom, fame, or a great major contribution to American literature. We were just talking about this, but they don't see the need to defend learning to play the trombone in the high school band when you're not going to go and be a famous trombonist. That is still part of the education. So we start with a base on that kind, and then I think we get much more, we get interested in things we were just talking about, which is really fascinating, the technical things about writing. And yeah. how to make things work, as tell a story in the best possible way.
Thank you very much for talking with me today.